Hi, I'm Chick McGee, and we're off the air.
You suck.
Strap in, people. This is going to get real. There, is that better? I'm Chick McGee. This is Jason, our producer. Hi, Jason.
Thanks for watching today.
You're welcome. I don't know if I like this music. Where'd you get this? Is this listener submitted? What the hell's he banging on there? What is that, a pipe? He's banging on a pipe. Well, now that I said I sort of don't like it, we can't say who it is. Is that? Who is it? Is it Scott Shafter?
No.
Oh, good. Phew.
Yeah, I don't know if there's like a cat loose on the piano or what.
There is a cat loose on. Turn it up.
It's over now.
What was the name of that? Do we have a name?
It has a name.
A Cat
about,
Loose on the Piano is the name of it. And who's it by?
For Lips Only. I think there might be an email there, okay. A few down. As you go through them, I think I'll let you know which one.
All right. Today's guest, Mr. Keith Alberstadt. We'll get to him in a moment. Hi, Keith.
Hey.
There we go.
I liked the song.
You liked that?
Yeah,
a little jazzy,
combination of Jethro Tull and
you think?
Little Pete Fountain.
What if that was Jethro Tull and Pete Fountain?
It's not.
And I completely discounted that thing. What? Email time. Hi, Chick. On a whim, I went to chickmcgee.com and was pleasantly surprised to find your podcast. Thank you, Stu. I immediately subscribed, have heard episode 1 and 2 so far. It didn't suck as badly as it could have. And my wife and I enjoyed Jess in episode 2, but they have Jen here?
Yeah,
they think her name's Jen?
They think her name's Jen.
No, it's Jessica. Don't do that. Although I like you on Bob and Tom, I love you in a completely heterosexual way. When I listen to the podcast, I still have to hear the remaining ones, but I'm sure they'll all be hilarious. Yeah, you got a lot of catching up to do here, Bobby. Too bad I have to work, which requires me to be on the phone, or I'd knock out the rest this afternoon. Okay, that's from Bob. Bob Stewart. Oh, that's the first full name I've given. Is that good?
Nah, you're fine.
Probably not. Hey, Chickster, big fan. Thanks for introducing me to podcasts and being the only one I care to listen to. I enjoy feeling like I can relate to you and love the banter between you and Jess. That's my girlfriend, sometimes co-host. Tell Jason, the producer, thanks for getting you up and running, but he can be quiet now. We don't need this sort of thing.
See?
I like what you're doing as far as being on the show with me.
He might just be giving me hell.
I think he's giving you the business. That's what he's doing. He's got your head in a headlock. That's from Josh in the town of Pierston. Not sure where that is. Yeah, put your town on here on the emails.
Well, and what does he do?
He works, he's a wastewater operator is what he does.
Mm-hmm. How about that?
He's in charge of...
I bet that best part of his day is listening to your podcast.
Dear Chick, absolutely digging your new podcast. Love to hear about the real Chick, Shopping with Jess. Hilarious. You can make anything funny. I don't know about that. I love it when you burst in with a big F-bomb. I don't know what that means. Haven't missed one yet. Great fucking guess. Oh, that's what it meant, probably. Big Kostaki fan. Always appreciate a candid approach. Sincerely yours. See, if you're a guy writing a guy, probably shouldn't end it with sincerely yours, should you?
But who was his name up top?
This
there?
Is Mark. Oh, Vin. Vinny Testosterone.
Mm-hmm. And you know what Vinny's responsible for?
What is, I don't know. What? Is this Vinny's music?
Yeah.
Cat loose on a keyboard? Crank this up. Yeah. Yeah. There's Jethro Tull.
Keith likes it.
Keith's loving it. There's the cat. There's he's banging on the pipe. There's banging on the pipe. All right, yeah. The laid back off the air with Chick McGee. Thank you. Okay, I like it all of a sudden.
I feel like we have to go look at art sculpture now. Just I got an urge to go look at new art.
New, yeah. Brand new.
But thank you, Mark, for the listener-submitted theme music.
Yes. No, thank you, Vinny. Testosterone. I like that. Dear Chick, this is from Eric. Hope I get a name drop on the podcast. Keep up the good work. Listen to all 7 shows this morning. Wow, thank you, Eric. Hashtag need more Chick. All right. So there you go. Those are the emails. Thanks for listening to the Off the Air podcast. I just wanted to say... this is our 10th show. It's sort of an anniversary. As Jason likes to say from time to time, this thing didn't exist 9 weeks ago. I still can't believe it sometimes. And we just started it as a fun thing to keep Jason entertained. And
yeah, it's about me.
And it keeps me from having to move to San Diego again. So thanks for that. And I was just talking to Jess, who's not here today. I don't know what she's doing. Something important.
Something with pillows?
So, actually, to be honest, I think it might be pillows.
I was joking.
I think it is pillows. Oh, geez. I think it is pillows. And I was talking to her. We were talking about, can you imagine somebody making a movie and working a year and a half on a movie and releasing it and people not liking it? Mm. Because I'm getting a little bit of that, because this is so much more personal for me, the podcast. I just feel like I kind of contribute to the Bob and Tom Show, but this is kind of our baby, and, mm-hmm. and it's a good feeling to have people like it, and I appreciate it, and I can't thank you enough.
And you read just a few emails each episode, but
only because I can't read that well.
Well, that
I'd read more if I could.
For every one you read, there's another 10 that are appreciative and thankful for the podcast. So it's striking a chord with people.
Well, I hope so, and we're going to keep doing it as long as we can. As long as we can.
You know, we were talking on the way over here that I'm always behind the curve on mm-hmm. things. Mm-hmm. Twitter was one of the few exceptions where I hopped on almost immediately. And I didn't realize that you could make, I realized you could make your own call name or whatever you call it, your at name.
Handle.
But I also didn't put too much thought into it because I thought I wanted people to find me.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
But I didn't realize it. You could still find me if I had something unique. I just wrote Keith Alberstadt. Wow. That's my handle. Nothing creative about that at all.
Technically, I'm Chick McGee 1.
Right.
Because there's some, or was, I can't even change it now because mm-hmm. there's too much involved. Mm-hmm. I think Chick McGee is available, but I don't know what I'd have to do to get it changed.
Now, at what point do you...
But somebody had Chick McGee when I jumped on, so I had to go... To Chick McGee 1. It wasn't me. I don't know who it was.
At what point do you get to where you have to do that official little envelope?
I don't know what the verification check. I don't know what that is. I mean, there are some...
But as a celebrity, like, at what point...
I don't know how many followers...
Maybe I should...
How many followers you have to have to... according to the official guidelines, it's... What they do on Twitter is that if you go on and see a check mark beside, let's say, Jason Alexander... It's a verified account, and they do that because Jason Alexander might indeed be a more common name, is why they verify. Okay.
Well,
but I don't know what the process is or how you apply for it.
It's not just a common name thing. It's if some jackass out there wants to say, hey, I'm...
No, wait a minute. Here's Keith.
I'm Joe Biden.
As the jackass.
And like, well, wait a minute. you could just pick any name and say, sure. I'm that guy.
Yeah.
So,
oh yeah!
So that whole verification thing isn't just because it's a common name. It's
celebrity-based. I don't know what they do, but there is there's a fake Barack Obama, but the handle is at fake Barack Obama. So I don't know if they make them do that or not. And there's a fake CNN and a fake ESPN.
Yeah, there's a
not Steve Carell.
Not Steve Carell.
Yeah, there's a lot of those.
But
yeah.
The fake Barack Obama the other day tweeted the actual Mitt Romney, and fake Barack Obama said tweeted. Meet me out in the street, son.
Okay.
So
I think you get a lot more people voting if you kept it real like that.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Yeah, if Barack and Mitt actually look. This shit about to get real.
Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
Why not?
Why not?
People are itching to hear what these guys have to think about what's going on nowadays.
So would you, if you started a Twitter account today, would you have put something, you know,
having had funny a chance Keith to think about yeah. it? Yeah, funny Keith or wacky
yeah,
Keith.
Yeah, I didn't put too much thought into it.
Or hook it up with a t-shirt.
But I would, my website, because my name isn't spellable to a lot of people,
mm-hmm.
My website's keithcomedy.com.
Okay.
So maybe it would be Keith Comedy, mm-hmm. @ Keith Comedy. I don't know.
You don't know?
I have no idea. I've been called Jenkins a lot because I've got a joke in my act where I tell a customer service rep that she can't pronounce my name, so I tell her it's pronounced Jenkins.
And she says, but it's spelled A-L-B. B-E-R.
It's a longer joke, but yeah. Same. The joke is it's pronounced Jenkins. So people call me Mr. Jenkins. So maybe Keith Jenkins would be an option.
Okay.
Anyway, no. I didn't put thought into it. It's just Keith Alberstadt, and you should follow me. If you can't spell it, go to keithcomedy.com and click on the little Twitter thing.
Oh, cool.
I know chicks idea. Like me. We were excited to have
I
you
am
on.
I am nothing like you. Oh, but I agree with you on that. Go ahead.
We were glad to have, because we don't know you that well. You know, we haven't hung out with you. But
you've been coming on the Bob and Tom show for quite a while.
Very likable guy.
Thank send you. Send us Cook, one of the few comedians.
Who kiss ass and send cookies.
I don't look at it like that. I look at it as good manners, and as he's a kind person. Like a week after he was on the show, he sent us really great cookies.
You know, Jeff Gordon used to send us cheesecake.
Yeah, he doesn't do that.
He doesn't do that anymore.
No.
So don't be Jeff Gordon. Keep sending us cookies.
Look, keep Jeff safe.
No, I love Jeff.
But if he would blow a tire, that would be fine with me. I'm just saying. I mean, okay. not my. He's all right.
Keep him safe.
He stopped sending us cheesecake. I don't want him to crash or anything. If he just... You know,
perhaps it's being,
tire would go out and he'd limp into the pits and not finish. That would be fine.
Perhaps it's being intercepted. You ever thought about that?
You know, I get into this. I get into this situation a lot. I get upset with people, and it's not. I'm not actually upset at that person. I'm upset at that person's people. Like they'll do. Mm-hmm. They'll right. intercede mm-hmm. with. So maybe Jeff Gordon's people put the brakes on the free cheesecake, and I'm not really. Upset with Jeff.
Or they're telling Jeff we sent the cheesecake when in fact they just took it home.
Employee thefts, number one in the United States. I don't need to tell you that, Keith. How long have you been coming on the Bob and Tom Show, Keith?
Let's see. My first appearance was at your old location. I came to the studio with James Gregory, but I wasn't in the studio. I was just kind of chilling in the green room.
No kidding.
And then Tom came out, and I was just walking around the halls looking at all your photographs and stuff, and Tom came out and said, you want to get on for like 5 minutes? And absolutely. And
Tom did this.
That was probably in, oh gosh, 03, maybe 02.
No kidding.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah, Tom.
Everything's been going on around me for about 10 years.
That was a tiny location. I remember it being very small.
A little smaller. Did you have much material then?
Yeah, that's a good question. Do you have anything?
As far as stage material, I had maybe 30 back then.
Okay.
And then, but I was so flustered, I wasn't prepared. So I was like racking my brain for my A material, and I was trying to segue into different jokes. And
this brings me to my first comment about you. It's not necessarily a question, I guess. But there are two guys that have been on the show that, you know, we've had hundreds of comedians. And there are comedians who come on, hit it out of the ballpark right away. And they're on, you know, they've been on since. There are some guys who come on, horrible. They're never on again for whatever reason. There are some guys, and this is you and Dan Cummins, just pop into my brain. And I've told Dan this story. Mm-hmm. Their first appearance was lukewarm. Mm-hmm. I was like, Who was that? Keith Alberstadt.
Almost forgettable.
Almost forgettable. Right. Thank you, Jason. Mm-hmm. Next appearance, knocked it out of the ballpark. You and Cummins. You're tied for, I guess, most improved or comeback player of the year, whatever you want to say.
Well, it's a little daunting. You guys, you might not realize it because you're in the trenches here.
I am in the trenches.
But it's a little daunting. You start thinking about how many listeners you have, and it's nationwide, and you're like, I got to make a good impression because I want to keep coming back. And so, yeah, you put a lot of pressure on yourself, and I'm sure that's what Dan and I both experience.
Oh, it's such a fine line, though, between people who can handle that pressure and do well and realize they need to improve for the next one or whatever. And then, but you'd be surprised. Some guys take that pressure and are standoffish and quiet and get upset and won't talk and are combative.
Well, notoriously, guys come in here and say, I barely slept last night. So they're in here wore out.
So they're wore out, and guys who come in drunk.
Oh, yeah.
Hookers.
But those guys don't care.
No, those guys don't care. Yeah.
But it's been, you know, 11 years. That's how long I've been doing this full time. And that whole journey has been a lesson in, you know, taking it seriously, but also enjoying it,
right,
and having fun with it, and just and relaxing yeah. a little bit. So it's a combination of both, and it's a tough juxtaposition to keep going, you know, because mm-hmm. You don't want to take it too relaxed where you don't care, because right. then you'll start slipping.
Right.
But if you drive yourself batty mm-hmm. with how serious you take it, you're going to literally get too overwhelmed to function. So or come across as
he's a
tight,
little, he's distant, tight, yeah.
Or you're not hitting your punchlines mm-hmm. or whatever. So yeah, there's that. You got to create that balance. And I, over the time, over that 11 years, it's I like to think that I've. Mm-hmm. I've done a better job than I used to.
Some guys come in and our producer, Dean, we need you to write down like 6 or 7 topics. And we give those to Tom and he looks at them. And a couple guys, and I won't say who, no, I'm not writing down anything. So why wouldn't you try? You know, why? I guess it's my Midwestern sensibility. And you too, you're from the Midwest, right? I
mean, Nashville.
Well, you consider that the South, Nashville, Tennessee?
It's the middle of Tennessee. So, if you want to...
Sort of, you know, the Midwest paint.
The
Midwest.
Almost, maybe it's my Midwestern sensibilities, but it's like, why wouldn't you, you know, just go, yeah, okay, whatever you guys need, you know? But right. there are some, yeah, I just don't... I don't know. Maybe...
I agree with you. I think, but I every now know. And then, it's funny. This happened just this week. Tom will sometimes mix...
Oh, yeah.
The lead-ins?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, so how's New York treating you? You on the road a lot? Those are two different things. Which joke do I do?
So you're on the road a lot. You like your parents? You know, yeah. I can see him. I can see him doing that. Yeah, absolutely. That's my Tommy.
But you guys have been awesome.
It's that big brain. He's thinking so much that there's a traffic jam in there sometimes. And
so 11 years.
11 years. Believe it or not, 9/11 is my anniversary.
Oh my goodness!
Isn't that nuts? I put my 2 weeks notice in 2 weeks prior to the attack.
2 weeks. Isn't that crazy? From what?
From 2 weeks before 9/11.
No, what job? What was your job?
Oh, I'm sorry. I was in corporate sales at the Nashville Sounds baseball team.
No kidding.
AAA.
But I bet you love that too, because you love sports. I know you.
Yeah. I worked at Vanderbilt, home of the mighty Commodores, for 4.5 years.
If you know anything about Keith Alberstadt, keep this one thing in mind. Vanderbilt, is it Vanderbilt University?
It is.
Is number one in his heart.
This is the sigma, VU. See the V and the U?
Oh, and the VU. You put two fingers up and then stick your thumb out, and that's VU.
VU. That's what you see on.
Now, you went there for 4 years? Or was
4 years undergrad.
Or 9?
Thought about law school. And
oh,
then,
really?
And that was a very brief thought.
So you're from Nashville. You went to high school there.
Yep.
Right to Vanderbilt.
My dad was a professor at Vandy. And
I didn't know that.
Went to school there, and I knew I was going to be a comic, but... You know, did the whole backup plan idea.
I feel like Kostaki here just a second.
Nobody does that.
Yeah.
Seriously, no comedian goes, you know what? I want to be a comedian, but I better get my degree first.
Because I was doing it. Yeah. I was doing it, and I was struggling. It wasn't going as well as I wanted it to go. And
your grades or?
No, the stand-up.
Oh, the stand-up. Okay.
Yeah, I just, you know, I was kind of being realistic about it, I guess. And. Mm-hmm. Out of college, I was doing comedy sporadically.
Always a performer, though. Weren't you like on the radio broadcast or something like that?
I was a DJ my junior and senior year for the college station. Then when I got out, WRVU.
Oh.
Which I believe is down now. I think they got bought out or whatever. I don't keep up with it anymore.
Okay.
But anyway, so I went and worked in the athletic department, and I kept comedy kind of on the back burner, and I was still struggling. I was still, you know, making progress, but it was very, very slow progress. Mm-hmm. And I finally just said, I was around 25. I said, you know what? I gotta jump in with both feet. I gotta commit to this. And so I did.
But you were working at corporate sales at that time.
I was at Vanderbilt.
Vanderbilt.
And I was also on the broadcast team for the football games.
Doesn't some Nashville country and western star own the Sounds, or did own the Sounds, or the Nashville Sounds? Who am I thinking of?
I believe Larry Gatlin was involved at some point.
Gatlin? Is that who I'm thinking of? Mm. You know, all the gold in Southern California is in the bank. There's something in Beverly Hills. That's a Larry Gatlin song. Don't laugh at me. You guys look this up later. anyway.
So anyway, yeah, that was it. Then I went, decided to get another job that paid more money, saved up some cash, and then said, screw it, I'm going full time, and haven't looked back. It's been a great ride.
Did you have any friends who you either perceived or were actually in comedy doing really well that you could talk with? Or
Yes, quite a few. Had some mentors in Nashville that, you know, they weren't famous, but they were working full-time comedians, and so they had a lot of advice. I was I soaked in, and I'm a type A dude. I mean, if I commit to something, I'm a workaholic. I'm going to commit to it, and I soaked it up like a sponge and was determined to, I'm going to make this. If I fail, I'm going to fail swinging.
So. Keith and I were talking before we went on, and not that we're on because we're off the air. But he said, yeah, I've got tons of stories, but none of them involve me doing blow off a prostitute's ass or something. I'm not sure what the actual wording was.
Yeah, I'm a little bit of a Boy Scout, you know?
That's okay.
In fact, a buddy of mine, Tony Deo up in New York.
I know Tony Deo. I know that name.
He's a good dude. And we always joke that he and I are kind of the same ilk. Like we keep reading all these memoirs coming out, like Keith Richards, and we have no stories to compare to that sort of stuff. So we create memoir. We have what we call memoir nights. We go out and we just get crazy drunk and hope that something notable happens that we can write about, and nothing ever does. Like, okay. We just got drunk, and now we're hungover, and that was a waste of time.
Kostaki's a friend of both of ours, so I'm going to go back because what you were telling me was reminding me of Kostaki because his dad was a professor.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And your father's a professor. So, but I asked Kostaki this question: what was it like? What was he a professor of?
Geology.
The competitive head-to-head world of geology. You know why? Oil, Keith. Anyway.
Exactly.
So you go to the professor of geology, your father, and you say, Dad? Did you call him Dad? Father?
Dad.
Mr. Alberstadt?
Yeah. Dr. A?
Here's what's happening. I'm quitting the Sounds, the baseball team. I'm going to go into comedy. Mr. A, professor, your father says...
Get out of my house.
No,
they knew I was going to pursue it. They being my mom and dad.
Right.
They knew that it was a dream of mine, and they knew I was going to pursue it at some point. I just think they never said this, but I know, I just had a feeling that they thought it was kind of like a hobby, that it was going to be short lived.
Cute. Did they were
yeah,
use the word
get,
cute?
Get it out of my system, you know, travel around a little bit and
all right.
And that motivated me as well. But they never said that. They were very
show you.
They were very supportive. I'm going to quit the Sounds. I'm going to do this full time. And they said, that's awesome. Go get them.
They did?
Oh, yeah. They were very. They were in my corner from day one.
Everybody's parents are better, different, alive. I just, you can go on and on, Jason. So you're out there in the comedy. Your first professional step on stage was it at Zany's in Nashville?
Oh man, I don't even remember my first
emceeing or.
Well, my first time as a full time comic was the New Orleans Comedy Festival the week of 9/11. So nobody was flying in. The industry that was supposed to be there from LA and New York, they weren't there.
Oh my God.
The crowds weren't there because everybody's home watching the news and freaking out and thinking everything's canceled. So every show was just a comics getting drunk. I mean, we're in New Orleans for crying out loud.
Bourbon Street didn't close down on that week, I guess. I mean, why, right?
No. The bars were in full effect. Everybody was kind of in shock.
Did you see the girl swinging out onto the street?
Did you see the girl swinging? Come on.
Really? During 9/11?
No, they weren't live. No. They've got like a little...
What?
They got it's like a landmark. It's a mechanical leg thing that kicks out from the...
That's
been there for
I've
decades.
I've always seen that on...
That's not a real person. If they had a real person, then no, she had the night off.
Stand by for Chick sounding like the hillbilly that he is.
Go.
I've always seen that on the TV because I've never been to New Orleans.
Oh, dude, you got to go to New Orleans. That's a fantastic city. I would not live there for $1 million.
It's like living at a bakery and you like chocolate cake, right? Yeah, the same thing.
They got all sorts of corruption going on, and the weather's weird. The food's awesome. The music's awesome, and the nightlife is incredible. Mm. Great place to visit. Couldn't live there.
When's the last time you were there?
Probably.
I mean, I was asking, is there a casino there now and things like that?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah?
There's been a casino there for a while.
Oh, my gosh.
Harrah's, I believe.
I got to go.
You should go, man.
We got to go to...
Good times.
Write that down. Austin?
Mm-hmm.
New Orleans.
We got to go. New Orleans? All right. Well, I went to Nashville this summer.
Congratulations, Jason.
See, this is what I get. I try to bring up stuff.
And you had a great time, I bet.
Well,
heck yeah.
You know what?
No.
All I experienced was Broadway.
Broadway's great. You get your picture taken with Elvis, you go to Jack's Barbecue. That's Nashville for me.
You know that's not Nashville.
See, that's what I'm asking. That's why I'm asking.
Well, there's a lot of honky-tonk bars in that Broadway area that you should check out.
That's my favorite thing. You walk down the street.
Roberts, Tootsie's.
It's the middle of the day. On a Saturday, and there's live music everywhere.
That's cool. Absolutely.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, and a lot of these honky-tonk hole-in-the-wall bars are famous for, you never know who's going to walk in. You know, you
could have... That's true.
Randy Travis comes stumbling in. No, so
this isn't my line. This is my girlfriend Jess's line. She tweeted this. It was Randy Travis. I will love your drunk ass forever and ever. Amen.
Forever and ever. Amen.
Yeah.
So but growing up there, how did that affect your comedic senses?
Is that a big comedy town? I mean, no, is that?
Well, they've got one club, Zanies, which is awesome.
Zanies.
I love Zanies. Mm-hmm. What was advantageous as a comic is that Nashville is so central to a lot of different cities. So you can go to.
That's true.
I was able to keep my office job and develop a foundation by going and doing open mics and showcases at Louisville, Birmingham, Chattanooga, Memphis, even St. Louis, which is 5 hours away.
Okay, so when you quit, you didn't.
I wasn't quitting and having nothing to go to. I had built up relationships.
You're cautious, aren't you?
I'm a planner, dude.
Yeah.
I'm a dork.
Because when you quit, I heard you quit. I'm going to do comedy now. But you were like, while you were still working, before you quit, you were...
Yeah. I'd made my rounds.
Setting things up around.
I was setting things up with guest sets and showcases. I started... When I quit, I had mostly MC work at clubs. I was featuring some like one-nighters. And it was a learning process. I didn't know what the whole concept of routing was. So I went to a small town just outside of Youngstown, Ohio.
Sure.
St. Clairsville, Ohio.
Heard of it? Beautiful.
I drove all the way up there.
From Nashville.
It's like a good 9 hours.
I was going to say 9 or 10, yeah.
Nine hours for 2 days for $200 and then drove right back.
That's not cost effective.
No, it's not, but I was learning.
That sounds like how we run the podcast.
Next time.
Yeah. Yeah,
but that's how it works.
That's how it works, right? And then you were opening or middling or emceeing for James Gregory? He's a comedy legend, obviously.
Yeah, yeah. James and I started working together, I think, in 03.
03 or 04, somewhere around in there.
He's been great. And, travel around with him for a while. Not successively, but every now and then I do one or two weeks with him. And he kind of took me under his wing, and I've learned a lot from him. And then it just got to a point, especially after I moved to New York, where we haven't severed the tie. I still work with him occasionally, but it was time for me to go and do my own thing.
How long have you been in New York?
Since 06. So when's this going to air? In 2013. So it's been 7 years now.
I'm always ready for the smart aleck attitude from myself. Mm-hmm. I've never...
But to answer your question, Jason, about how living in Nashville helped the comedian chops, it was just that whole sarcastic attitude that I have. And growing up in a neighborhood, I was one of the two youngest kids in the neighborhood. And
always trying to get the older kids' attention.
Yeah.
I always wanted
the attention. Yeah. And there's a little bit, to be honest with you, there's a little bit of... I was a nerd in high school.
No.
I couldn't play sports because I had asthma really bad. So
why is that always fun?
I don't know why I'm laughing, but it is.
So
it's kind of funny.
I was so determined. Like, I don't want to be a nerd, even though I am. It's like, I want to do something else. And that kind of sparked that whole, you know what? Maybe stand-up might be something.
I'll be, I've got some friends in comedy, obviously, and I'll be on their websites or or their Facebook, or now Twitter, obviously, and almost every time, not almost every, half the time, there's a picture of them and you. I know. you must be everywhere. All the this is me and Keith Halberstadt backstage. Well, here's me and Keith Halberstadt over there.
I'm a likable guy, Chick. People want to take pictures with me.
I think you might have more comedy friends than any comedian that I know, I think.
And most of them are good people.
All of them are good people.
So was there an inspiration as you were wanting to get into comedy? You know, hey, I want to do this. Did you see a special? Did you hear someone's CD? You know, Bill Cosby, blah, 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 whatever. Was there something that kind of really struck you?
That clicked for you and said, I want to do that. I want to be a comedian.
What struck me to get to that point was just the whole idea of being my own boss and being creative and saying what I want to say. Not that I'm iconoclastic or anything, but, you know, being creative and not, you know, having to play by somebody else's rules to a certain degree, and seeing the country and whatever, that played more into it than any particular comedian or special. But I did have my influences. Like Regan is still to this day my biggest influence. That's the guy, the funniest guy on the planet, in my opinion.
This is our 10th show, and we've had Brian Regan's name mentioned in probably half of them.
He's amazing.
He's absolutely amazing.
Yeah. But he's then, you know,
very unique. And
I loved Greg Giraldo, Kathleen Madigan, mm-hmm. Jim Gaffigan, Dave Attell, Louis, especially over the past few years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, just a variety of influences that.
Who were we talking to, Jason, on one of the shows, and they said one of their friends had to get a real job, and it was like I died or something. They said, oh, why would you? You got to go get a real job? No, you don't want to do that.
Yeah, I don't recall who it was.
Maybe it was Chad.
Could have been Chad, yeah.
Chad, yeah. But
you got to get a real
job. No, hilarious. You know, it's funny. Maybe it's because I'm close to it. The comedy profession and being a comedian at the same, I can't think of any other profession that everyone is really nice to each other, but then they're also incredibly competitive.
Right.
There are some comedians who think there are so many laughs per evening per audience.
Right.
Oh, this guy's getting too many laughs. What's going on here? Mm. Yeah. Shut him down. You know. Yeah. I mean, I've seen that happen.
Oh yeah.
And I don't know how that, but you seem to be just really nice right across the board, though. I mean, I don't think you have an agenda or anything.
No. I can get competitive. I mean, especially.
See, there you go. You're competitive now.
That's our nature because, yeah, we are. We take pride in what we do as comedians, and when we see other comedians get, whether it be a Comedy Central special or a Letterman or a Fallon or whatever. Yeah, there's that part of you that's like, really? Why don't they look at my tape?
And who got what? What?
You know, that starts to subside after you get your own credits. But there's right. still that element of competition. Absolutely. That's why comedians, when they date each other, it's very difficult because you're thinking about, well, what's she doing that I'm not doing? And this
right.
is, so, yeah, there's always going to be that element. But I think I lean more towards the whole brotherhood of comedy, and mm-hmm. we're all in it together. And I know I'm unique, and I'm confident enough to know that I'm funny. I'm going to get my breaks. I know that my demographic is different than most because I'm clean on stage, but I'm it's not hokey clean. It's still irreverent and edgy, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
So I know that I'm confident that, you know, just because other people are getting stuff and they're getting laughs and they're getting credits or whatever doesn't mean I'm not.
Right.
So. Let's just go out there and have some fun, man.
Take some pictures and put them up
Take
on Facebook.
Take some freaking pictures.
Let's get some pictures. Put them up on the website.
Speaking of credits, what's your best credit?
I've done two Lettermans.
Two Lettermans. That's pretty good.
Thank you.
That's pretty good. So walk us through the first one. Like, you know, getting it.
Dude, that was a nebulous experience. It was such a funky haze.
I can't even imagine meeting him because I liked his daytime show.
Yeah.
I liked his NBC show. I love his CBS show, although it's.
Let me ask you your opinion on this, and I'm gonna change the name for
all right
obvious purposes.
Fair enough.
But the first Letterman I did, I was head over heels crazy about a girl that I just met about a month prior.
Mm-hmm.
And in joking, I told my buddy Tony, I said,
Tony Deo?
Yes.
That son of a
I
gun.
Said, let me think of a name I can use instead of the actual name.
Sharon? Or is that the name?
Okay, we'll go with Sharon. We'll just go Sharon Jenkins.
Right? Okay. Right. I like right. it.
I said, Tony, how much money would you give me if after my set, instead of waving to the crowd, I opened my coat jacket and it just says, marry me, Sharon Jenkins. I said, you know how quickly that would go viral? Like, that guy's got some serious balls to go on national TV.
Yeah, his first Letterman appearance.
Yeah. And he said, he goes, I will personally write you a check for like $10,000 if you do it.
Was he good for it?
I chickened out. But that whole I had that literally on my mind for a good while. And then when I actually did Letterman, it was such a blur.
Yeah.
You're like, you're in there. And I was halfway through my set, and the set was going great. I was halfway through, and I had the thought enter my head, holy crap, I'm on Letterman. I'm doing Letterman.
Yeah, I can't
imagine. I could hear Paul Schaefer 2 feet away laughing.
That's great, Dave.
And it was, the whole thing was surreal. And I remember I had the thought, don't mess this up, because I had to change one word in my set. I say crap normally during the joke, and they said, you can't say crap, say hell. The joke is scare the crap out of somebody.
Oh, okay.
And so they said, just say scare the hell out of somebody. And so going into that joke, I was like, don't say crap. Don't say crap. So it was a very out-of-body experience.
Well, and it's 3 or 4 minutes, right?
It's nine? It's about just shy of five.
Shy of five. Oh, okay.
Yeah. Oh, and the second time was, and I was warned about this. The second time is a little more nerve-wracking because that's when it hits you, like, this isn't just a flash in the pan thing. Like, they like me enough to have me back. They think I'm funny, and that's when it becomes even more surreal and a little more pressured. You're like, wow,
my second
Letterman. This is insane. So yeah, I felt a little bit more pressure the second time, but it was they were both really fun. But Letterman, God love him, he's so reclusive that all he does is shake your hand and. They break for a commercial, and he
comes over. He
goes right back to the desk.
Like, shake, great job.
What?
Shake, walk back to the desk.
So, what's the process of getting on Letterman that happened for you?
It was arduous, and it was the whole thing was just a lesson in patience. I met Eddie, the booker. I met him in Boston.
Eddie Brill. Been on the show, yeah.
Boston Comedy Festival, I think in 04 or 05. And he had a seminar about, you know, how to get booked and what to do and how to structure your act and what we're looking for, whatever. I sent him a tape, literally a VHS tape.
This is an 04?
I think so, yeah. Behind the curve, chick. That's what I keep telling
you. No, I who was I talking to the other day? And I said, oh, yeah, you should probably send him a tape. And they looked at me like, what, Grandpa? And I go, okay, yeah, probably not a tape. Probably just to send him to your YouTube channel now, I guess.
Right.
Or whatever it is.
He, very gracious, he called me literally 5 months later. I remember it vividly. I was in my brother's house, and he said, hey, Keith, this is Eddie Brill. What?
No, it's Hello? Not.
And we went over the set, and he said, you know, I like it. You got to work on some stuff. And he gave me some notes, and he said, I want to see something in 6 months. You know, if you want to, if you want to send me something in 6 months, be happy to look at it. And I used that 6 months as that was my timetable to send him something. So every 6 months, like clockwork, I would send him the set that I wanted, that I envisioned doing on TV. And not all the time, but every now and then he would email me back some notes. That started in 04. And then in I just moved to New York, so it was in 07. It was very ironic because Eddie was in Nashville performing at Zany's.
Oh, okay. Yeah, because I think he might have been on the show promoting that.
I was at a New York Mets game, and I got a text from Brian at Zany's saying, you want to come in town and do a showcase for Eddie? Like, I just moved to New York.
I just got now, here, Brian.
And now I get the opportunity, and it's in my hometown that I just left. So I went and did a live show, and I found out later that when he saw me live, he knew that this guy's going to be on the show. Mm-hmm. But he didn't say it to me. And then in November of 09, I was at Zany's again. I ended up recording the set. mailed it to him. Zingo. Didn't think anything of it because in New York, I went to another one of his seminars just to see if anything changed, you know. And he made a comment that network television, there is kind of a ceiling when it comes to age. So I started.
What? Really?
Well, whether
did
it's,
he imply
whether it's
that
real
or
not,
actually say, yeah, okay.
He kind of implied it.
Okay.
And I don't know exactly how he said it, but yeah. And maybe I read too much into it. So I started freaking out. So I didn't, not freaking out, but I started to think that, all right, my window might be closing here. So when I sent that DVD in 09, I wasn't holding my breath. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden, in January, I emailed him and said,
what's up?
I emailed him and said, because I knew I he liked my live performance. Mm-hmm. So I just emailed him and said, hey, do you have another showcase coming up that I can be a part of? Let me know. I'm in New York now, obviously. Just let me know. He emailed me back and said, hey, I'm going to put you on the show. What's your schedule like coming up? And I couldn't tell if that meant another one of his showcase shows,
right.
or the show.
Letterman, yeah.
And I was, you know, you don't want to be that guy. I was like, what do you mean? You mean the show?
Are you crazy? You must be nuts to want to put me on Letterman, but I'll do it.
Like the comedian, you don't want to come across as you don't know what the hell you're doing.
You're savvy. You're a world. You know. You want to make him think you know what's going on.
So in the course of the email exchange, it was obviously revealed that it's the show. And it was a week's notice, literally a week's notice. So I was in Washington that week at the Improv, and I just we talked every day about the set, mm-hmm. and what to take out, what to put in, and we had to take, excuse me, the last tape I sent him was 8 minutes. We had to shrink that down to about 4.5. And so that was the process throughout that week. And then I came back. It was Super Bowl weekend. So I came back that Sunday from Washington, missed the Super Bowl, and we taped on Monday. And again, it was a blur. It was just the whole thing happened so fast.
I can't imagine.
Do they provide cue cards for you to keep your 4.5 minutes?
Nope.
It's all you, huh?
Nope.
That's impressive.
Yeah. And they were great. They were absolutely great. It was another reason why it was so relaxing is that CBS does an amazing job of making you just comfortable. Mm-hmm. They get you there early enough. You can do a walkthrough of the studio, so the audience isn't there. You kind of get a feel for what the studio looks like, and that's when I realized like this is just like a small theater or a comedy club. Mm-hmm. So once you get that vision, like, you know, this is no different than what I do on every weekend.
Right.
It kind of takes the pressure off. Plus, backstage they're all just you know, they're chill. They're walking around, and nobody is hurrying. Nobody is rushed and freaking out. So it kind of makes nervousness almost out of place. They make you feel that much more comfortable than you normally would.
Did you get the cue card with your introduction?
I did.
Yeah.
Gave it to my mom and dad.
Yeah, Tommy Jonigan has one.
That's cool.
That says,
Tommy's done like Letterman. 12 Lettermans.
Yeah, something. I don't mean to contrast and compare, but
he's a great man. I love Tommy John.
Yeah, he's a good.
What a good guy.
Man.
Yeah.
Good man.
So post Letterman, what sort of effect that has? So you got, you know, all your friends, I assume, sent you text or emails congratulating, and was there a Keith Alberstadt bump, you know, in career or
something tangible? It
like
helped
somebody?
A little bit, but you know, it's not like the old days where the doors just go flying off the hinges. Mm-hmm. But it certainly helps to have that credit. You know, you get that leverage, especially in New York. You know. Turned a lot of heads amongst my peers and bookers up there. And I remember Lori Kilmartin, who I looked up to. She was
Sheen when you say that.
Yeah, she used to
live. That's her great joke. If she married Martin Sheen, she'd be Lori Kilmartin Sheen. I love Lori.
Okay.
I feel I want to take Lori by the hand and tell her, get back on and do live comedy. Mm-hmm. But she won't listen to me, but.
She still does shows every now and then.
Yeah, but I just like to see her.
But I remember we were doing some small production. Anyway, we were all backstage, and I remember she walked up to me and said, "I heard you do Letterman. That was awesome. Congratulations!" And she and I didn't really have a relationship. We knew who each other were, but we weren't buddies or anything. So, you know, moments like that really. It really sank in, like, oh, this is actually, you know, an amazing experience.
So is Letterman the show now, or is it Ferguson or Conan or
as far as
or
like
Letterman or Leno as far as what Carson used to be?
Or, if you had to rank them, I think I think Letterman is at the top. Yeah,
I would think so. Yeah,
just because of the longevity of his career, you know.
And I think people who know which has got to help. I think people who know comedy look at that and say, okay. To be honest, I mean, Conan's great, and but if you had to go, okay, people who appreciate comedy and know thing and the better, there's no other way to say it. I think the perception is the better comedians are going to be on Letterman because they think David's funnier than those other guys.
Also, it's just more of a landmark show. You know, it's more right. of a, it's more of a signature credit. But practically speaking, any late night show, anytime you can get on TV sure. and build your fan base is advantageous. So, you know, you can't throw the other ones out. Letterman is definitely the highlight of my career. To do two of them, it's been fun, man.
Well, it's not. But I mean, there might be the when's the third one? It could be any.
We actually are in talks.
There you go.
So hopefully soon.
So you live there in Comedyville, in Astoria, right?
Astoria, right?
Yeah,
right.
Like who lives around?
Who doesn't?
Are your neighbors?
Who
yeah.
doesn't?
I mean, all the cool kids, sure.
Ted Alexandro, Moody McCarthy, John Fish.
I miss Moody McCarthy. He was on here.
He was on Letterman recently.
Two or three times. Was he?
Yes.
Somebody
killed it.
Jason, tell me these things.
Killed it.
But he. I remember him being so funny and has not been on the show years. I'm going to say 3 or 4 years he hasn't been on.
Really?
Yeah.
Well.
And who's you have a roommate?
Andy Hendrickson.
No, that's not right. That's not him. Is that right?
Okay. I'm going to trust what Keith says.
You know what else I'm remembering about Keith Halberstadt?
Uh-oh.
He was attacked by a bat.
That's true. Macon, Georgia.
What?
Yes.
Yep.
On stage.
Yep. Crazy. And
the Comedy Cave, is that where you were?
Hey!
Woo! You were on fire!
People think I'm kidding when I say that the audience thought
Keith Halberstadt.
They thought it was a part of the show. Because they honestly
thought a bad attack was part of a stand-up.
And here's why. It was the first or second week of October.
Okay.
And I was doing a couple of Halloween jokes. And so I do these two Halloween jokes. One of them is about Alfred Hitchcock and the birds. And literally right after the joke about the birds, this bat comes flying out of nowhere. My only explanation is
this became viral.
Blind,
the video became viral.
I wouldn't say viral, but a lot of people have seen it.
Yeah,
but I think that you know, because they're blind, he the vibrations from the microphone and my voice. You know, I would assume that's the reason why he thought those were bugs or something. I don't know, but he came out of nowhere, and it wasn't just one drive-by. It was several.
He was upset with you in some way.
I was kind of playing around with the audience, like, you know, playing it up, like, oh, it was a bat.
And then he got pissed.
I remember.
You mocked him.
I walked around a chair, and I kind of looked up, like, hope he's not coming back. And the thing was right freaking 5 feet away from
Oh, God.
Coming right at my face. And he literally, like, just.
I can't get over the part where people thought it was part
of
the act.
Well, you know, probably when he said birds, you know.
Yeah, and that
the Hitchcock
thing. It was
like the word to release the.
But that's not a joke. People, after the show, honestly, like, hey, where do you keep that bat? Where do I keep? He's not part of the show.
So
what's his name?
You could have had bat shirts.
Do you call him Skeeter? Skeeter's a good name for a bat.
How about they love skaters?
Why would Skeeter be a?
So you can't act like a girl up there. You got to be a man, right?
But I violated that.
Okay, you did. Okay.
Oh, I would.
Did you kind of just, you know?
There was a.
I didn't flail.
Okay.
But I was. I kept a little bit of composure.
Okay.
Because it was an all ages show. It was with James Gregory. It was a family show.
I was smoking some meat in the backyard, and as we all know, when I smoke meat, I drink vodka.
I'm always glad you say meat after that. I always don't know what you're going to say.
And we have a bunch, evidently, and I hadn't known this until, like, I'm going to say 2 months ago. We lived there like 3.5 years. We have a bunch of bats, evidently. I'd never been out
that late.
I'd never been out that late at that time of year. And this bat comes whipping by, and they would scare me.
Yeah,
it scared me, and I was outside where the bat's supposed to be. I can't imagine you're up there, you know, talking about airplanes and cats and dogs, and here comes a bat.
And then, you know, they get what do they do? They can get caught in your hair, and they start going there.
Then they
bite you. Then you got to get rabies shots and scurvy and restless leg or whatever they got.
Restless wing?
I don't know.
Restless leg. I think they might have.
Sickle cell. Restless, they got everything.
Restless leg. Craziest night for Keith Alberstadt up to this point. You and who were where? Go.
There's so many to choose from.
What? Well, no, but you said earlier that you're trying to do that, right?
So, oh, yeah, right.
No?
Well, there's been a lot of crazy moments. I've got mortar attacked in Baghdad. That ranked up there.
I think that's worse than the bat. Oh.
I may have told you this story before.
Go ahead.
But this isn't a crazy story, but it's definitely unique. We were doing a tour in Iraq, and I would... During every one of my shows, I would mention I was from Nashville, and I'd say, home of the Commodores, Vandy fans. And, of course, nobody would say anything. And then one night, we're doing a show in one of Saddam Hussein's hunting palaces, and tiny little palace, small audience. I do that line, and Iraqi starts going, yeah. He's like a translator.
Yeah?
He's like, I'm with Vandy, go doors. I'm like, what?
And he was right.
And I thought the comedians put him up to it because that was the running gag. And whenever Keith says Vandy fans, nobody says anything. So I thought they convinced him to say something. So I kind of blew it off. After the show, it's legitimate. He defected when Saddam was in power.
Right.
And found himself in Nashville. Didn't know anything about American football. Started following Vandy for who knows why. And then when we invaded in 05, he got a job with the Army, but he still followed Vandy football and was a legitimate Vandy. Like, I can't find an American to talk Vandy football
That's
with.
That's crazy.
Here's an Iraqi. Not exactly answer your question of the craziest nights, but...
Drunkest you've ever been. How about that?
sweet land of liberty. Nashville is up there on numerous occasions.
Mm-hmm. The Palm?
I'll tell you a Nashville story. This was, I don't even remember what year this was, but it was December, and we were at a sports bar across the street from a grocery store that had Christmas trees out.
Loving it already.
I was within... arguably walking distance. Probably a good 2 miles. My apartment was 2 miles away from that location.
Mm-hmm.
I woke up next morning fully clothed on my bed. I get up to go to the restroom, and there's a Christmas tree in my apartment.
But it was Christmas
and
time.
I told my laying down horizontally on the floor. And
that's not Christmas.
I told my roommate, I was like, dude, why'd you get a Christmas tree? He's like, I didn't. You walked home with a Christmas tree. I had gone over
to the Christmas tree farm, Christmas tree lot.
Yeah, and just lifted one. And, of course, my conscience.
You stole the Christmas tree?
My conscience couldn't handle that.
Well,
so
thankfully.
We drove back, and I put it back, and there's this guy smoking a cigarette. You know, some 20-year-old doesn't care.
Doesn't give a damn about anything, yeah.
He's smoking a cigarette, looking at me with these weird, suspicious eyes, and so I had to explain myself. I said, hey, last night one of my friends thought it would be funny to steal one of these, so we're just bringing it back. And he said, we lose like a dozen of these a week. Nobody's ever brought one back. So that was the kind Christmas gesture in me.
I heard Lincoln did that one time. Stole the tree and took it back. No, maybe it wasn't Lincoln. I don't know. Well, none of these stories involve drunken behavior. I mean, other than
I
guess
stole a Christmas tree.
And you didn't remember it.
Yeah, but look, the there's not a lot of rock star stories in this noggin.
I don't believe you. I think there are some in
there.
No, there
are.
Not,
I'm just, we got people listening. But you're right. There have been some crazy nights.
So is your first love, is it performing? Because I know, and you're too modest to mention it, but I know you write for Saturday Night Live.
I do. We start this week.
The Weekend Update.
Yes.
Do you find as much satisfaction out of writing as performing, or is it not even close? Or can you see yourself doing that? Or
just
writing?
I want to be on stage. That's where I see myself. But anytime I'm being creative, there's a love in there that I'm passionate about. So, I love when I'm creative and I'm writing, and whether it's for somebody else or for myself, I enjoy that process. So, it's fun for me. It's work, but it's fun. Sometimes when you don't see the fruits of your labor, like if Seth doesn't use my jokes, and you're like, oh, and you see what he's using, you're like, oh, man,
why would he?
My stuff was better than that. But sometimes that gets a little aggravating, but whatever, man. It's the game.
What was your somebody? We were actually talking about this off the air today because we had a bunch of comedians on the air today on the Bob and Tom show. And we all got to talking, and we ended up talking about Keith Halberstadt. And
really?
Yep. And Tom said, "Oh yeah, one of the jokes that Keith wrote, something about Tebow."
Yes.
And got and yeah. What one was that?
It was back when he just finished Florida and he was going into the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
The joke was Heisman Trophy winning quarterback Tim Tebow will be featured in a Super Bowl ad that speaks out against abortion. Note to NFL defenses next year, when Tebow runs the option, he's always going to keep it.
That's a fine joke. As I said this morning when Tom told me that joke, I said, and it's a compliment, really. That joke is almost too funny to laugh at. No, I mean, because, you know, you're sitting around with a bunch of comedian buddies and you'll hear about a joke and it's so good and stuns you and you go, oh my God.
Yeah.
Instead
thanks,
of
man.
Busting out laughing, you go, you do
the point. Oh, that's good.
That's good.
That's good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Appreciate
that.
Like professionals would, that's the way you react. Is it? Holy moly.
Yeah.
It's like when an astronomer sees who studies the sun? Sun people. When they look at the sun,
Egyptians.
They don't go, Egyptian. They don't go, wow. They go, oh, there's the sun. It's the same. There's the same thing in there somewhere, I think.
That's very kind of you, Chick.
Is what I was doing. So I can't.
I'm trying to think of
crazy stories?
Some drunken hellion stories.
But you've been involved romantically with some ladies?
Periodically. and we talked about this on the air this week, you know, where...
Right.
Yeah, but you were holding back. It was obvious.
But there's a little bit of...
You're a gentleman.
I am a gentleman, and I'm a nice guy, and there's that whole nice guys don't finish first adage that is very true.
Very true.
Very true.
Keith. I personally have had my heart broken a couple times, and I'm...
It's not
fun.
She
ended up with who? That guy? He doesn't even like her.
And then they realize, and these girls realize later, oh, yeah. I had a good thing going with that. Yeah, that guy was actually nice. I should have stayed with the guy who treated me nice.
Talks to me, smiles at me. The other guy didn't even look at me. Yeah. I know. I feel you, Keith.
There have been a couple of occasions like that.
Longest, you don't have to say who, but longest relationship?
6.5 months.
That's pretty good. Is that good? Look,
you're looking at the wrong guy.
I am not the
I've been married three
relationship
times
type.
And madly in love now. So I don't think I legally can comment on anyone's relationship status.
Look, I'm the worst to talk to about that because I was a nerd and goofy looking throughout high school.
Not like now. Pow!
Bam! So yeah, I didn't date, and once I got out of college, I was I dated around, didn't really want anything serious, and I got into comedy, and I was laser focused on comedy.
Yeah.
So I just never really took advantage of I never really dived into the whole relationship realm of life.
Mm. So you go on a first date, let's say with a gal.
Yes.
And the 6.5 month girl. How'd that start?
No. Well, I'm just saying. I'm guessing this is best case for you. You go out, and the girl says, you know, I don't really want a long-term relationship. And you're like, high five, let's hang out the next 4 months. I mean, is that kind of how a Keith Halberstadt rolls?
Let's just do it.
Let's just chill. Yeah, let's just hang for the next 2 months.
Let's just touch each other. Yeah.
That's happened on occasion.
Is that ideal?
Sure.
Okay.
I'm getting to that point now.
You know, actually, there's a really great podcast out there called Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin.
Mm-hmm.
And he interviewed Letterman. Not that long ago. I'm going to say a couple months ago. And Letterman said that he waited because he was laser focused. Everything in his life was the show. Everything was, who's on the show? We're going to go to New Jersey tonight. We're filming all night. The show's tomorrow. What's on the show then? What's on the show the next day? And he regrets having laser focus and waiting so long to have his son and getting married.
Right.
And do you see yourself like that, or you doing the right thing and it's fine right now?
It's fine right now. The same thing that I said earlier can be applied here. You know, you want to take it seriously, but not what happened was, several years ago, I met this girl, total happenstance,
mm-hmm.
and we had one date. That was it. One date. and I put all my eggs, like, that's she's the one.
That was
she's
that
everything
was
I wanted in a girl.
Sharon Jenkins.
It was.
It was Sharon Jenkins.
It was. She was every single thing I wanted in a girl.
And you knew that the first date, didn't
yes,
you?
Yes. And I was blown away.
Mm-hmm.
It was revealed that she's got some stuff she's not over. You know, she had some baggage. So that's why it didn't work out, among other things, probably. But that's when that little thing clicked in my head. Like, you know what? Maybe I should and do want something more than just my career. And so for the next 3 years, it was, I got worked up a little too much. Like, okay, now this is the one. And that didn't work out. Okay, now this is the one.
Okay.
And so I wasn't chilling out. I wasn't just like enjoying the ride and waiting for it to happen. It was more like, this has got to work.
Yeah.
And that's, I just drove myself crazy. And I got to, and that's when I started to scale back and go, all right, let's just get back to where I was. And I'm a very spiritual, religious guy. And so I started to say, you know what? Whenever God wants me to meet who I'm supposed to meet, mm-hmm. it'll happen. So let's just enjoy the ride right now and chill. That's where I am right now.
It's very romantic.
Is there a,
it's romantic.
What's on the Keith Alberstadt checklist? Is there a typical girl? You know, you said, you know, this girl has all the qualities. What are a few of those?
Let's go superficial. Blonde, yeah. Brunette, great big old boobies. We're trying to get that in every
what?
Show now. That's one of our catchphrases.
I am.
Thank you, Jess.
When I say looks don't matter, I mean, obviously I've got to be.
That's a lie.
Well, no, what I mean by that, it looks matter, like I got to be attracted to
you. You don't want to wake up every morning for the rest of your life and go, it's, okay.
No, well, you're misunderstanding me. It's not that. It's like, yeah, of course I got to be attracted to her.
Sure.
But as far as like redhead versus brunette versus, like, okay. I don't care. As long as I'm attracted to the girl and there's a connection there, then I'll.
See, for whatever reason, go. I had always been attracted to blondes.
I had a relationship.
And that's certainly not the case now, as we all know. Yeah.
I've had relationships with variety of looks. Redhead, blonde, you know, mm-hmm. petite, not
Russian.
So petite.
Any Russians? I don't know why.
No. Yeah, actually, no.
Wait. Yeah.
That didn't sound like I believed that at all.
There's a Russian girl in New York who I wouldn't mind.
Going out on a date and talking and putting your eggs all in one basket, and this is the one.
But she's not the one. So I don't know. To answer your question, Jason, I'm a sucker for Southern girls.
Okay, sure.
So Southern
belle, like
religious, would be nice.
As Dr. Will would
Catholic
say.
Catholic would be even nicer.
Ding fucking ding. Your mom's Southern belle, am I correct?
Yes.
There you go. You're just the classic, you're a good boy, Keith. Isn't he?
He's such a good boy.
Shut up. See, this is.
But this kills you, right? And the day they want that little dangerous. You never know what he's going to. But you are. You're a good guy. But deep, you love your mom. You're from the South.
Deep down, girls want a guy like Keith.
They
probably
just don't
have to
know
go through some crappy guys.
Yeah.
To figure it out.
I think so.
Right. And that's.
Unfortunately, they have baggage. But.
Right.
Yeah, they got to get all loaded up with the baggage before they can do anything.
You got to unload that baggage.
So you got any?
I wish I was a little more
what forthcoming.
I wish I was a little more Gene Simmons for you guys.
No, that's not the case at all. No, that's not. No, we want the best Keith Alberstadt we can get.
All right.
Is there a dark side to Keith?
Oh yeah.
Like, how about some pet peeves? Do you have like some pet peeves?
I've got a few.
Those are usually revealing.
Look, the dark side. I'll go ahead and reveal the dark side.
Is the dark side that you're so sarcastic you upset people? Is that the dark side? Because I get that feeling that is the dark side.
The dark side for me is I've got several facets of the dark side. I have anxiety. I get worked up a lot. I've got to get that in check every now and then. You know, I have to realize, like, all right, I got to reel this in.
Like, just like anger or like shortness of breath or sweating or
shortness of breath sometimes, you know, chest tightness and mm-hmm. You know, a lot of it is sometimes it's with girls, sometimes it's with the career. You know, if a show doesn't go well and somebody of importance was in the audience watching, I'll start overthinking that, like, mm-hmm. you know what if and I was reading a book about anxiety and it wasn't even a chapter. It was like part of the chapter was about creative people are often the most common demographic of yep. people with anxiety because mm-hmm. our minds work like that. We go in these variety of tangents for a problem, and we fixate on like the worst possible scenario.
Manufacture scenario.
Exactly. And we start what-ifing the crap out of it.
Yep.
And then next thing you know, we're spiraled out of control.
You're in luck, Keith. You need to listen to podcast number 7. It's called Dr. Will Miller. And he's a psychiatrist, a clinical psychologist. And when your mind's, you need to, what is it? Relaxation and distraction.
Mm-hmm.
You need to keep your mind busy. You need to stay creative
sure.
because as soon as you're not, your mind keeps going
right.
and all sorts of things pop up into yep. your brain, and not all of them pleasant at all times.
Right. And they say an idle mind is the devil's
work. Yes, yeah. it is. He likes to get in there and
yeah.
go crazy.
And I've done a better job recently of realizing when I'm starting to go off the rails. I'm like, I got to bring this back in. So that's one facet of the dark side.
I like to look at it like I'm a pinball machine sometimes. And every now and then you have to hit me on the side of the head and kind of reset me. Mm-hmm, and I tilt a little bit. And then I'm fine.
And I'm blessed to have people in my life that I can rely on for that. And I'll call them up and I'll be like, hey, and what do you think of this? And what do you think? And they'll have to shake me out of it. Not literally, of course, but like, Keith. And they'll talk logically. I'm like, yeah, all right. I'm being overreacting right now.
I am so lucky in that way, in that everybody I work with and the woman I'm in love with and my kids, everyone who's important in my life, realize, okay, Chick's in a bad mood today, or he's struggling. Just give him an hour. Give him a couple hours. Because when I went to San Diego, how long ago it's been now, 17 years ago, or however 17. Long it's been. I worked with a couple of people there, obviously never worked with me before. And I had an episode where I was upset at how something had gone professionally and didn't think it had gone very well. And pretty close to like, oh my God, what are you people doing? What are you thinking? Whereas if I'd done that here, they would looked at me and say, oh, well, that's just Chick being Chick.
Right.
Where like I accept everybody around here for how they act and and that's really tough, and you're fortunate to have that around you. That
absolutely.
I mean, not that you shouldn't stop doing it or try to rein it in, and I don't think I do that often anymore, or hardly ever, or just on Thursdays. But the thing is, that's friends, and that's, you know, very fortunate to. Well, that's the comedy world. I mean, you have friends who are basically your coworkers, and they know what to expect, and they give you a wide berth.
But the people who I rely on mostly, if it's a career thing,
mm-hmm.
you know, if it's a, you know, I don't know, a Letterman appearance I'm freaking out about or whatever, yeah, I'll lean on my peers, but. A lot of the personal stuff,
mm-hmm.
My brother and my sisters have been invaluable. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you're right. Having those people in your life, huge plus.
We didn't ask you that. You're a brother and two sisters? How many sisters?
I'm the youngest of four, brother and two sisters.
Brother and two sisters.
Very close to my
you're
brother.
You're the baby.
I'm the baby.
Mm.
Another reason why I'm in this line of work. Everybody look at me.
True enough. Not getting anything. No pictures of me in the here. Hello? Anybody?
There's a lot of truth to that.
Sure.
The baby books are, you know, the firstborn and down to the fourth. You're like, what? I'm like in the background of my picture.
Yeah, or the other second.
Oh, yeah, we forgot Keith. Keith.
The first baby they bring home on a pillow, and there's doves, and the second baby sleeps in the pantry somewhere. We really don't know where he or she is, but I'm sure okay.
That was the reason I didn't go away to school. Was because I was the fourth, and my parents had seen everything, and they're like, you know what, just be responsible. We don't care.
Hey, guess what? He wants to be a comedian. Huh. You know what? Let's just let him go.
Let him.
See what happens.
But I also, part of my anxiety, I want to get to this dark side stuff, so mm-hmm. people get the full
mm-hmm. anxiety is one.
They don't. They don't want to.
Temper? You got a temper? I've got a temper. I bet you got a temper.
Really?
I'll give you a great example. And I, whenever I think about this, I still cringe because it was not my finest moment.
Yeah.
Vanderbilt, the mighty Commodores, we were like 12, 15 point favorites in basketball against the very hated Tennessee Vols. Suck it, Vols.
That's the big rivalry, Tennessee and Vanderbilt.
And I was in, I was doing a big event for a cable station, and they were it was a partnership. It was the cable station network and a production company, and they were doing this big show about the funniest people in the South. And we did the show, and then we're all hanging out. These are big wig people.
Mm-hmm.
And we're in a bar, and the game is on. And I excused myself. I was watching the game. I'm thinking, we're 15-point favorites. We're so much better than Tennessee. Mm-hmm. This was a few years
ago. If there's ever a game I have to watch around people, this is a good one because I won't get upset.
Right. Well, it ended up being a tight – it was in Nashville.
I understand.
So, you know, we hardly ever lose at home. So I thought it was a slam dunk, no pun intended, and I'm watching the game and ended up being a tighter game than anticipated, and we lost, and I was visibly upset, and I had the presence of mind to stay away from the group to kind of let the steam go away, and I got back to the table, and I thought I'd calm down, and I was just chilling out, enjoying everybody's company.
How about them balls?
And then I looked up, and they were showing highlights on SportsCenter.
Oh.
And I just, why does it have to be? Why does it have to be? And I had other comedians were there too.
Yeah.
So I was kind of talking to them, but because I was so
loud and upset,
it was definitely evidence to everybody there that I was making. And I made an ass out of myself. I was like, I can't stop. They're a bunch of criminals. They're a bunch of thugs. Freaking hate Tennessee. Dropped some F-bombs.
Oh, God.
And then I had to realize later, much later, not immediately. It was like, you know, a good couple of hours later, and I was back in my hotel room. Like, I really made an ass out of myself.
I think everybody's that way about their own.
I'm passionate about Vandy. I mean, to the point where, yes, I've got a little bit of a temper.
I can see that.
What incenses me the most is when I say I've got a temper about Vanderbilt and I hate when we lose. When somebody says, well, you should be used to it by now.
I'm
like, oh, you want a punch in the face, don't you?
I think everybody's that way about their favorite team.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Well, especially,
you're that way about Purdue, Jason.
Oh, absolutely. And I was going to say, I'm sort of a, you know, Vandy's one of those teams that, in basketball anyway, that Purdue people, we quietly root for because you got Kevin Stallings as a coach.
Yeah.
And which leads me to another question. Are they ever going to redesign that floor?
No,
to where,
that's like saying,
I was going to say, I love that
Fenway,
floor.
When's Fenway going to get rid of that wall, that stupid monster thing?
We're
never
going to
get rid of the floor. Yeah. It's awesome.
Okay.
It's like the Redskins are never going to
I expected that. Right. I expected that.
Redskins aren't going to stop playing at RFK.
But it's so
what?
Wide.
What happened?
Big
what they did?
Swath of, there could be great seats right there on the one side, right? Hello?
It's unique. It's a unique look, for one. Mm-hmm. Secondly, it's an advantage to us, especially to teams who've never been there, and teams and coaches who've never been there before, because they don't know how to coach from the baseline versus the sideline.
Well, it's nice we didn't have to see Bruce Pearl's freaking jacket there for years, you know, in the screen, because it was always off to the end.
A cheater?
Yes.
We all know he's a cheater.
Was he perhaps, you know, at the source of your anger that one night at the at the bar?
You know what? He was coaching.
Yeah, I guarantee it was. Yeah.
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 No. What you meant was, I guarantee.
Yeah. Not a love. Not a lot of love lost. Yeah. Me and the Tennessee.
Vanderbilt Commodores.
But anyway, so yes, I have a dark side. Getting off track here.
So your dream job, your dream, just doing comedy, headlining around the country, but you're doing that. So
you know what? I'm a little what they call zen. I guess it's just. Yeah, I've got goals. I had more a few years ago. Like a few years ago, my dream job was to anchor Weekend Update.
Okay.
And when I moved to New York, I kind of, you know, was a little laser focused on that. And I thought being a contributing writer was a step in that right direction, which it is.
Yeah.
But it very well might happen. I'm on their radar whenever they have an opening for a full-time position.
Mm-hmm.
I'm involved with that audition process. For a writing position. So it's not out of the realm of possibility, but now I've kind of scaled that back to just going with the flow, you know, because if I just say, this is all I'm going to do, and this is all my focus,
that's when
then all of a sudden somebody comes at me and says, hey, I just wrote this movie and you would be perfect
as the guy carrying the balloons and the cowboy hat.
And we want you to be a recurring character. I'm not going to say, nah, because I'm focused on this one goal.
Right.
So now I'm just, you know what? I love the fact that I'm doing what I love, and I'm loving what I do, and I'm just going to keep on this path and try to do the best I can and see what happens. I know it sounds cliche, but it seems to be going well so far.
Yeah. Why not? Keith Alberstadt, thank you.
Hey, thanks, Chick.
Jason. At Keith Alberstadt on Twitter.
KeithComedy.com.
KeithComedy.com on the web, which is on your computer now, I understand.
I wonder if Dark Keith is available.
Dark Keith there, we saw a little bit of Dark. He relived the Vandy upset there.
Did you
see how
adamant I was about telling you my dark sign?
I kind of liked it, yeah.
You got to know I'm not just a dork. you got to know that.
We knew that. Okay. Thanks.
Oh, great stuff.
ChickMcGee.com. All things Chick. Okay. That's it. Good night, everybody!